Welcome to the debauchery.
Grey's Anatomy, the most iconic binge-worthy drama, is back, along with answers to the biggest cliffhangers. Will Teddy survive? Will Joe and Link finally find happiness together? Meredith returns along with fan faves like Arizona. You can now stream every episode of Grey's ever on Hulu and new episodes next day. Watch new episodes of Grey's Anatomy Thursdays at 9, 8 central on ABC and stream on Hulu.
What's good, everybody, and welcome to the next installment of YouTube and Chill. I hope you all enjoyed the last episode about the Uvalde school shooting. Well, I mean, not enjoyed, but you get what I'm saying. I hope everyone had a great time ringing in the new year. And yes, by having a great time, I also mean sitting home and being in bed by 10 p.m. So I hope that was great for you. More importantly, I hope everyone is safe, happy, and healthy. In this episode of YouTube and Chill, we'll take a look at the 2013 documentary called Lost for Life. It was distributed by Snag Films and directed by Joshua Rolfe. It tackles the question of whether minors who commit a violent crime should spend the rest of their life in prison. Now, the full documentary, which is about an hour and 15 minutes long, uninterrupted, can be found on YouTube, and I'll leave a link for the full video in the description. The full video discusses four cases of juvenile murder. Jacob Ind, he was 15 when he killed his mother and his stepfather. Sean Taylor, he was 17 when he killed a rival gang member in a drive-by shooting. 16-year-old Josiah Ivy killed two strangers in their home. And the ones that we're going to be talking about today are Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk. They were both 16 at the time of their crime. And they were obsessed with the movie Scream. They stabbed and killed their classmate, Cassie Jo Stoddart, in an attempt to bring their own version of Scream to life. Now, I have condensed this episode as we're just going to be discussing Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk, and I've added additional footage from their home video recordings leading up to the murder. I do suggest eventually watching the original documentary in full, but again, we'll just be talking about the murder of Cassie Jo Stoddart by the hands of Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk. And let me know in the comments if they should be allowed to receive a reduced sentence based solely on their age at the time of their crime. I will be posting this episode in both audio and visual format. So for the listeners, if you want to watch the video, you can pull it up online or go on your Patreon app. And for the voyeurs like me, you can also listen to the episode while you're driving to work or voyeuring through your neighbor's window, whichever. So let's go ahead and get into this episode.
Hello, this is a collect call from an inmate from the Bannock County Jail.
Hello?
How you doing?
All right, sweetheart, how are you?
Not too good.
I know, baby.
I have to come home.
Baby, I know that, and I'm sorry, you're going to have to stay strong. Are you saying your prayers?
Yeah, but Mom, I want to come home.
Baby, I promise you that we're working on that, okay? Sweetheart.
Can you try?
Honey, we're trying everything we can. I promise you, we're trying everything we can. There's nothing more in the world than I want my boy home with me. Okay? We're doing everything we can here. You know how much I love you, baby.
The prosecutors are trying to get me quiet with no parole.
Huh?
All right, so real quick, one theme you're going to find throughout this video is how blissfully unaware both of their parents are. It's like they've separated themselves so far away from the horrific crimes that their children have committed, basically grasping for the more minute details that will make them believe that their sons are innocent. Another thing is, like, whose mom talks to their teenage son this way? Like, I get telling your kids that you love them, but there actually comes a time when the goo-goo, ga-ga talk just becomes a little icky. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's just me. I was really uncomfortable, like, listening to that phone call. Like, picturing my mom, like, speaking to me that way as a teenager. Like, mom, chill. You know what I mean? Like, you're wearing me out. And how about some accountability? You know what I mean? Like, Brian Draper is begging his mom to get him out of jail. Like, oh, we're trying everything we can, baby, sweetie, honey pie, whatever the fuck she's saying. How about Brian? You just confessed to brutally stabbing and killing a 16-year-old girl. There's not much we can do right now. You know, I don't get this whole kid glove, like, shit. Like, no, face the music. Accept the accountability for what you've done. And like both parents and like everybody plays a role in this. All right. Enough. Just start rambling there. Sorry. I do that sometimes.
Should minors who commit murder be sentenced to life without parole? This is a crucial question the Supreme Court is going to be deciding tomorrow. But 38 states currently allow life without parole for minors who commit murder. But is it constitutional?
So the court comes to a fork in the road. Make a complete ban on life without parole for adolescents or set an age limit. Many lives hang in the balance.
Their brains are not fully developed. They will change. They will grow. Is this something that we can judge them for the rest of their lives?
After Barr was questioned by police, he was charged with a 12-year-old's murder.
Anyone who knows to come up with a gun so nobody else hears it has the mind of an 18-year-old.
I think everyone is more than the worst thing they've ever done. And I think that policymakers can make decisions about how to punish them. But I think children are uniquely more than their worst act. They have quintessential qualities and characteristics that a decent society, a maturing society, an evolved society, we believe is constitutionally obligated to recognize and protect.
I mean, valid points, I guess.
School is a very hard time. I had no idea who I was. I had no idea where I fit in among my peers. And I thought that I was a nobody in my high school. And I wanted to be known. And so I tried all these different identities, and I couldn't, you know, find an identity that I could not be pushed out of, I guess.
So if you haven't figured out by now, Brian Draper, this young man here, he has a stuttering problem, which gets worse the more, like, stress he gets and when he's talking about the certain situations and subject matter. But I get what he's saying, you know. When I was in high school, you know, I guess you could say I was considered popular. You know, I played sports. I did football, all that kind of stuff. But even I, like, struggled with my identity. Like who did I want to be? Who, you know, I think everybody kind of, like, goes through a little bit of that, you know, regardless of where you are and for lack of a better term, like, the echelon of high school students. You know what I mean? So, you know, even though, I had a lot of friends, you know, went to parties and all this other kind of stuff. Like, there was a sense of me that didn't quite feel like they fit in. You know what I mean? Like, who am I? You know, like, there's a lot of questions like that, especially, like, you know, like, I can't speak for teenage girls, but teenage boys, you're growing into, basically a man. And, like, it's strange trying to figure out your new world, so to speak, you know, high school, puberty, you know, interest in girls and like all this other kind of stuff. So when he's explaining, you know, like he was trying to search, trying different identities to see which ones stick. And like, I totally get that. And, you know, if there's, you know, other people out there, you know, let me know in the comments, like if your high school years are fucking awkward as fuck, regardless of, like I said, what level of, you know, popularity or whatever you are in school. So, yeah. Anyway, again, rambling. Sorry. Apologize. Here we go.
So I got into Columbine.
We saw these two kids. They were white and they
were Anna Karen. Upwards of a dozen people were injured.
They're running out of the
Columbine kind of created a subculture for disenfranchised, you know, kids who don't fit anywhere. I saw at the time they transcended their high school for the hour that they did what they did. They were in the spotlight.
Now, he's not wrong when he's describing Columbine, like, as being the mecca, for lack of a better term, for, as he says, disenfranchised kids. You know what I mean? Columbine was the catalyst for pretty much every school shooting that has followed since then. It was arguably one of the most publicized events of this magnitude in nature, and hundreds, if not thousands, of kids look to this event as what could be for them. You know what I mean? Like, the spotlight is finally on them. Everyone across the country and possibly the world will know who I am. You know, the separation between what they have done and what they have become is vast. You know, like, oh my God, you committed all these horrible, like, murders, but yet you're on every single fucking news channel across the world. You know what I mean? So it's like that notoriety is like outweighs the tragedy that you just fucking committed. You know what I mean? Excuse me. So you're like a celebrity of sorts to the other troubled kids that are trying to navigate their fucking this world, so to speak. Now, numerous attempts and actual like school shootings have been inspired specifically by Columbine, known simply as the Columbine effect. Adam Lanza, for example, our next episode on Criminal AF, he committed the Sandy Hook school shootings. He was known to have like notes and kind of like online searches of all of the school shooters in Columbine, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris. Also the shooter of the Parkland High School back in 2018 out there in Florida. What was his name? Nicholas Cruz. You know, he killed like 17 students and teachers. He also had like this obsession with Klebold and Harris and Columbine and everything like that. Like these shootings, like the inspiration from, you could call it an inspiration, isn't just the United States. Like it's spread out through the United States, granted, but it's also in Canada. It's in Mexico, Poland, Russia. All these like young mass killers have some sort of connection to Columbine, whether it's in their notes, in their journals, online searches, you know, videos, whatever. You know, there's some sort of connection to this, and they've basically become the pariahs of, like he says, the disenfranchised children. So I totally get what he's saying.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to be in the spotlight.
I've watched this video like a few times, and every time I watch it, it always hits me in the feels a little bit, you know, because knowing how fragile life is and it could be taken at any given moment, you know, whether, you know, in a car accident, falling down the stairs, crossing the street, whatever, you know, it could be over just like that, heart attack, whatever. And, you know, Cassie is going about her normal day in school, feeling like she has the rest of her life ahead of her, and full of opportunity and marriage and kids and all this other kind of shit. But in 13 hours, she's going to be stabbed and killed. Like, by the hand of her so-called friend who's now videotaping her like nothing's fucking happened. Now, like, he's speaking to her like everything's perfect. Like, hey, Cassie, what's going on? Have you seen fucking Tori? She's like, no. It's totally disassociated with the reality in this very moment that they're planning to fucking kill her. Like, they know. They already have this planned out. Like, they know I'm going to kill you. And he's like, yo, what's up? What's up, Cassie? You know, like, separating the reality to the fantasy of what they're going to do. You know what I mean? Kind of like, you know, talking before where the school shooters, you know, they got the notoriety. They got the, like, oh, this is how I fantasize myself being portrayed, you know, after doing this. When in reality, you're killing children. You know what I mean? Like, young children.
As you started, I think the first memory I have of her is we were joking around in class, and she was smiling, and that's the image I have in my mind now is I, you know, can't get that out of my mind. And man, that's hard to talk about. But in the beginning, she was just a nice person, and she, you know, sorry. I was attracted to her, and I thought she was a special person. But she started going out with this other kid I knew in high school, and it kind of struck me hard, and I was like, okay, so, you know, I am a loser.
Wait, have you seen Tori? He's supposed to meet me here at 7:30, and it's 8:19. He's an hour late. You don't even care, dude.
Okay. I met Tori Adamczyk in sophomore year. He started talking about the movie Scream, how it'd be cool to actually do a Scream type crime. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, have you ever, you know, thought about that? Not really. I mean, I've thought about other things, like, you know, Columbine. And he really wasn't into that. And I was like, well, I could either be alone or I could join his plan and you'd be with him and, you know, not be alone.
All right, so coming up here, right here, we're going to be meeting Tori and in a couple of minutes. And I'm going to hold off on my comments about him for now, but I want you to just take note of his interview and see if there's anything that stands out.
Every 3 weeks, and we'd leave right after work on Friday, drive up all night, come stay in the hotel. We wouldn't miss a visit for anything. Tori's a good kid, and we enjoy the visits. We have a good time, and Tori's the same person he was before he went in.
My mom still treats me like a mom, and she tells me to brush my teeth as she's leaving the visiting, and tells me to go to bed early or whatever, just the typical stuff, but I don't know, I think they're just worried about me.
Just another good kid.
Tori's a good kid, and Tori's just a kind person.
Tori is just a kind person who meticulously planned out and carried out a horrific and brutal murder. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and say it here, but you can actually see a difference in between Brian and Tori and how they hold themselves accountable for the murder. Brian openly details the events and what led up to them, while Tori accepts no accountability for the role he played. This was Tori's movie, so to speak. You know, like, he was the one that was obsessed with Scream, and he was wanting to create a real life version of the movie. And like, he basically schemed the entire thing. Brian, you know, chose Cassie because, you know, maybe he was a little bit jealous. You know, we heard that he had a crush on Cassie, but she chose somebody else. So there could have been a little bit of jealousy there. So they're like, oh, let's make Cassie the fucking the victim. But there were others on the list as well. Like, they had an entire killing spree planned out. Now, you'll see how Tori and even his parents continuously try to distance themselves away from Brian in the murder. Like, I just happened to be there. I didn't know he was going to do it. It was meant to be a joke. Like, I'm a great guy, blah, 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 blah. But the evidence showed that there were two knives used in the murder. Two knives covered in Cassie's blood, two different patterns in her wounds, like two different stabbing patterns, meaning two different killers, like two people doing it. So, like, by him saying, oh, I was just there, I whatever. No, you fucking participated. This was your idea. This was your plan. Neither of them were just there. They both carried it out. So for them to say, like, oh, no, Tori is such a good. He's so nice, and he's a perfect little gentleman, and all this other kind of stuff. And Tori basically saying, oh, you know, I didn't really want this to happen, and blah, blah. No, you're both fucking delusional.
And we're still a family. He's still every bit as much a part of our family as before.
I remember the first article I read about my case. Geez, I mean, they made me sound like this brutal, cold, psychopathic killer.
They were talking about Brian. They were making you just like
they
Brian.
They put us like as the same person.
They lumped them together.
I only hung out with him for 6 weeks before this happened. I think it's crazy how the last week of me being on the street, being free, really has affected the rest of my life. If you were to watch that video and nothing had happened, it would literally be a joke.
Be a joke.
September 22nd to 10:06. We're skipping our 40-hour. We're not even planning right now.
As he's filling out a death list.
Family, but GI number one. We have to stick with the plan. And she's perfect, so she's gonna die.
I don't know if it was probably my fault, and I should have seen it, but he did not seem capable of something like this, and it completely caught me off guard. I was just in, I don't know, I just couldn't believe it.
We're going for a high death count.
We're not going not to get caught.
All right, so this was the home video that I was telling you about. I added to this clip. Now, it's mostly just like strange rants about religion and how evil only exists because people believe in God. But there's moments where they name off a few people and stalk their houses. And like, it's kind of lengthy, but worth the watch to learn more about the psyche of teenagers and their possible disassociation with reality.
Ryan, if we're going for guns, we're just going to end it. We're just going to grab the guns and get out of there, kill everybody and leave.
We're going to make history. We're going to make history.
For all you FBI agents watching this, you weren't quick enough.
Quick enough, and you weren't smart enough.
All right, real quick. I can already tell that these dudes are psychopaths because what 16-year-olds listen to classical music in their car? Like, you might as well add that to the serial killer triad. Like, animal torture, bedwetting, arson, and classical music.
And we're going over today to Nathan's house. We're going to go snoop around over there and try to see if she's home alone or not. And if she's home alone, splat! She did.
Don't put your humor into this, Brian.
I'm not putting you over into it.
Yep. Also take note of the interactions between the two.
People will die. Memories will fade.
memories will fade. I wonder what movie you got that from, Brian.
Myself. That was for myself.
No wonder it was so lame.
Okay, we're on our way, and I'm gonna... I'll let you stay tuned. We're almost there. Nixon's house. It's clear out there in the pasture.
So he named another person. Something Dixon? I couldn't quite make it out. But, like, they already have, like, one, you know, they added this person to their list.
We've already snooped around her house a couple times. She's not at home, so we're going to go to the church over there, and we're going to call a girl and a guy named Cassie and Matt. They're our friends, but we have to make sacrifices, so... I feel tonight it is the night, and I feel really weird, you know, inside my stomach and stuff, and I feel like I want to kill somebody. I know that's not normal, but what the hell?
I feel we need to break away from normal life.
How bright is this light?
Because, let's say it this way. Parents, along with their parents, and so on, taught them about God, Jesus, the whole bullshit line. I'm sure you guys believe in God as well. I realized when I was in seventh grade, you don't believe in Santa Claus or vampires or werewolves, they're used to... metaphor, not to let they teach their kids back in the 1800s, I learned this in English class, about telling their kids that you can't go outside or a vampire will get you, just to make their kids stay and do what they want to do. God is basically the same way.
Yep.
Trying to get people to do good, or else, so-called, you go to hell.
And we're obviously going to hell if it's real, but you know what? Who gives a shit?
Why would you say it's
not
real?
It's not real, because it's so blatantly obvious it's not real. But
people believe it because their parents teach them, and so it's so hard for them to let go of it because they've been taught their whole life.
Yeah, I know.
But fucking what? The point I'm making is... we are also taught that things like killing people and other thing is wrong. The only thing that it's wrong about is because it's breaking the law, and the law's only wrong.
Natural selection, dude.
Because
natural selection, that's all I gotta say.
There should be no law against killing people. I know it's a wrong thing, but... Hell, you restrict somebody from it, they're gonna want it more.
Exactly. Goodbye, camera. Not home. My friend's too pussy to go.
They throw up another name. Again, the name's cut off, but it was like blank isn't home. My friend's too pussy to go check out the house, whatever. So now they got like another victim that they're like staking out.
Investigate, turn here. Why are you turning there, dude? Now we're gonna go over to Cassie and Matt's house. If they're home alone, we're gonna see.
Cassie's house, Matt is there.
Matt is there, sorry. We're gonna knock on the door. We'll see who's there. We'll see if their parents are home or not. If they're home alone, we will leave our way, and then we will come back in about 10 minutes. We'll sneak in through the door, because chances are they're probably in Cassie's room. So we'll sneak in the front door. Make a noise outside, and Matt will come out to investigate, kill him, and it'll scare the shit out of Cassie. Okay?
Well, sounds like fun.
We'll stay tuned. We found our victim, and sad as it may be, she's our friend. But you know what? We all have to make sacrifices. Our first victim is going to be Cassie, Stoddard, and her friends.
God, turn your brights off,
now, this is the night before Brian had the home video of Cassie, you know, in her locker in school. So that was like next morning. This is the night before. So when that interaction happens, you know, like I was saying before, he's so disassociated from the act of what they're planning to the reality of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, it's like some sort of fantasy going on.
asshole.
We'll find out if she has friends over. She's going to be alone in a big, dark house out in the middle of nowhere. How perfect can you get? I mean, like, holy shit, dude.
I'm horny just thinking about it.
Hell yeah.
Heard that.
Big, dark house out in the middle of nowhere. How perfect can you get? I mean, like, holy shit, dude.
I'm horny just thinking about it.
Hell yeah. So we're gonna fucking kill her and her friends.
You do you, Tori.
We're gonna keep moving on. I heard some news about Kirsten. She's gonna be home alone from 6 to 7.
Kirsten, that's 4 people on the list.
So we might kill her, then drive over to Cassie's thing, and scare the shit out of them, and kill them one by fucking one. Hell yeah.
Why one by one? Why can't it be a slaughterhouse?
2 by 2 and 3 by 3? Because we got to keep it classy. So yeah.
Classy.
It's going to be extra fun.
You're evil.
Yes, I am. So are you.
No, evil is an expression of God. That was another test you failed.
Evil is not an expression of God.
Yes, it is.
It's bullshit. You know it.
Evil, of origin, is a follower of fucking Satan.
There is no Satan. Real?
Then shut up.
Then how are we supposed to express ourselves?
Good and bad.
So I told you earlier to kind of like take note of the conversation between the two. Brian almost seems like he's like trying to be overexcited about the situation. And Tori is a little bit more matter of fact. He's also a little bit more aggressive in talking to Brian. Like he's, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but if you kind of like listen to it, he's very like, kind of like knocks him down a couple of times, you know, basically correcting him on what to say. You can just tell that he's probably the more dominant one in this friendship, and Brian's kind of like the tag along.
Criminal AF will be back after this quick break. Now back to Criminal AF.
We're bad.
We are
bad. That sounds so shitty.
We're evil. That sounds even shittier.
We're not, okay? They were sick psychopaths that had the pleasure of killing other people.
That sounds good, baby.
We're going to go down in history. We're going to be just like Scream, except real life terms.
We're going to be murderers.
Like, let's see, Ted Bundy, like the Hillside Strangler,
no,
the Zodiac Killer.
Those people are more amateurs compared to what we're going to be. We're going to be more of higher sources of Ed
Gein. Well, except for that sick of that twisted one.
Oh, do you know what Ed Gein's words were?
What?
Saw a girl walking down the street, right?
Yeah.
Two questions came to his head. I could take her out, have a nice time with her.
The killer?
And show her a good
her
time,
alive.
Charm the pants off her, or I wonder what her head would look like on a stick.
Okay, I officially hate this kid because Ed Gein is not the one who said that. It was Ed Kemper, the fucking goat. You know, so get your fucking facts straight, you fucking Nimrod. Not that I'm glorifying what Ed Kemper did. He's a very interesting fucking man.
Holy shit.
That's creepy, yes. Huh?
Holy shit. Murder is power. Murder is freedom.
I don't know if either of us would have done it if we were alone. We've fed off each other, I guess, and it was a formula for disaster in the end, you know.
The time is 9:50, September 22nd, 2006. We know there's lots of doors, there's lots of places to hide. I locked the back doors, it's all locked.
This is the night of the murders, and Brian and Tori have already been to the house at this point where Cassie was staying. She was actually house sitting for her aunt. Now the group, you know, they actually hang out for a while or watch a movie, watch TV, whatever, along with Cassie and along with her boyfriend Matt, right? So who was Brian's friend. From what I've discovered is that I don't think Tori and Matt got along very well. That was more Brian's friend, Now, while there, the two ask Cassie for a tour of her aunt's house. And while doing so, Brian kind of, you know, breaks away from the group. And he goes down to the basement and he unlocks the basement door, as he was just kind of like talking about. So now they have access back into the home later in the night.
Now we just got to wait.
I was actually the individual who snuck downstairs and unlocked the basement door. And it's that one choice where I was just kind of going along with it. I really didn't stop and say, why am I doing this? I just did it. And that one thing that I did, started this whole thing. And that's something that is hard to deal with. Because all I had to do was just not do that. And this may have never happened. Cassie's there alone, and we both have masks on. He walks up and he tells me, you do something scary, it's gonna freak her out. And I'm like, okay. And so I grab a door and I open it and I slam it. And then we just kind of go into the room and the crime happens. And we stab her. I really don't have a lot of vivid memories of the actual incident. I have what they call a flashbulb images of that. She's breathing hard and her eyes are open and she's looking off someplace else. And then I remember Sony, like, she wasn't screaming, but in my head I can hear that. And I know she screamed before it happened to her. But in my memories I have, she's screaming.
I just killed Cassie. We just left her house. This is not a fucking joke.
I'm shaking.
I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body just disappear. Dude, I just killed Cassie. Oh, fuck. That felt like it wasn't real. I mean, it went by so fast.
Shut the fuck up. We gotta get our act straight.
Okay.
When it did happen, I was just too shocked to do anything and I just ran from it and
All right, when it did happen, he's saying, I was too shocked to do anything, and I just ran from it. I hid from it. All right, now remember, there were two knives used in the murder with her blood on both of them, two different stab patterns, two different killers, okay? The evidence does not lie. Tori has zero accountability for what he did. Now, if you haven't picked up from the home video, you know, like we talked, Tori is kind of like the ringleader in all of this. When he speaks up, Brian tends to listen and kind of like gives way to Tori. Like when Tori went on that whole like spiel of good versus evil and God and, you know, laws and murder and all sort of kind of stuff. Like, you know, you could see how like Brian's kind of like going along with it. Like, okay, yeah, you know, you're running this show, you know, kind of thing. And like after the killing, Tori was like, will you shut the fuck up? We got to get our story straight. His thinking was clear, you know. While Brian was very erratic, very excited, like, wow, I can't believe, like, we actually just did it. And Tori's like, chill, like, act like you murdered someone before, bro. You know, kind of, like, even keeled. Like, all right, let's figure this thing out now. Now that we did it, we got to, like, fucking figure out how we're going to get, you know, out of it kind of thing. Like, almost very, very calculated. Now, you know, he's going to talk about, like, someone else's mistakes. And no, dude. This is you, bro. Accept it.
hid from it, and I made a lot of mistakes, but they were, I don't know, I just think, I look at myself now, and I'm 21, and I think how stupid I was at 16, and I just think how I feel like I'm paying for somebody else's mistakes at this point.
Paying for someone else's mistakes. No, that's your fucking mistake, dickhead.
Ryan didn't want us to know how much pain he was in. And he kept that very, very separate from our life with him and the family's life with him. He just didn't want us to know how much pain he was in.
That's the thing that kept us up at night the most for the longest amount of time, is trying to remember something that we missed. We adopted Brian at birth. When I think about our relationship and how strong of a relationship we had with Brian and how good of a relationship we had with Brian, if you walked into our house back then, we were normal. And why we didn't recognize that we had such a problem is horrific and something we still cannot bear.
Hello? Hello. This call is subject to monitoring and recording.
I just wish you would have talked to me about this before, because if you had told me anything.
I told you that I wanted to seek counseling again.
Tell me what, honey?
I told you that I wanted to seek counseling.
You did?
Yeah. Don't you remember that?
All right, who shit themselves with this dog? Don't lie. Because the first time I saw this, that scared the living shit out of me. So, yeah, there's that.
I just had an emotional visit yesterday. I mean, it was really hard to come here alone. It's always hard to go to a prison, and it's hard to walk down the gates and to be buzzed in and to wait and to go through the searches. And then just to imagine doing this forever until I'm dead. Everybody involved is dead except for Tori and Brian. They will outlive, you know, the prosecutors and the families and everybody, and there will be, it'll still be going on. It's just very overwhelming all the time, that there's never an end in sight, or it's hard to imagine how we're going to spend our life doing this. And I'm just overwhelmed today and a little bit. It's just hard.
Influenced by his friends. Tori is much more of a follower than a leader.
Yeah, who I was at that point and who I am now, it's like totally different people.
But that, who Tori was at that age, at 16, he still didn't commit this crime.
I made some mistakes and I learned from them.
But your mistakes weren't anything that you were charged with. they weren't the murder and the conspiracy.
Yeah.
That was Brian. It must be harder because you're innocent to be facing it.
Yeah, I guess.
Watch Tori's face when his father says, "That was Brian." Like, he looks away, he looks down, he looks at his mom. Like, he doesn't know what to do with himself. And he does, it's almost like he doesn't want them to see through the facade that he's putting up, and that he's actually a horrible fucking human being. And it's probably their fault, to be honest. Now, he can't maintain eye contact once his father begins, you know, declaring his innocence. Now, it's almost like either his parents are manipulating the truth to make themselves feel better about the situation when Tori himself knows that he's a fucking murderer, or that Tori is effectively gaslighted his parents into believing that he is completely innocent and had nothing to do with Cassie's murder, and he's in jail for just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Regardless of how you look at it, it's 100% toxic on all their parts. Let's look at that again real quick.
It's not.
They weren't the murder and the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Watch Tori's right. Face.
It must be harder shit. Because you're innocent to be facing it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Whatever you say, Dad.
It must be harder because...
Now watch the mother, too, while the dad's talking.
I made some mistakes and I learned from them.
But I mean, she kind of like looks at him, too, like, what the fuck are you talking
charged
about?
With. They weren't the murder and the conspiracy.
Yeah.
That was Brian. It must be harder because you're innocent to be facing it.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, his face right there was like, yeah, I guess, Dad. Sure, let's just keep believing that. Let's keep believing that it was all Brian's fault. Yep, I'm good with that.
It's not unusual that he would, have that response in his your parents, you having that response. I mean, it's a lot to deal with. I mean, you have to accept the societal brand that you are a convicted murderer. And that is a very scary term to have affixed to your name. And so it's really hard. He wants to please his parents. He wants to go home. And his kind of behavior it's really common and it's ordinary, I think. I think what makes somebody extraordinary is when they face everything and just kind of accept it. It's a hard thing to admit, you know. I killed Cassie Sauter. I stabbed a 16-year-old girl to death. That's pretty hard to say. When I first got here, I tried to blame others. And I met this individual in here, and he asked me what happened to my crime, and I told him, oh, I'm not exactly sure what happened. They said I killed her. I'm not even sure if I did or not. And he sat me down and he's like, stop giving me a whole bunch of bullshit, okay? If you want my help, you have to completely be honest with me. And he taught me about how I owe a tremendous debt to Cassie Stoddard. And the only way that I can even start you paying that is to, first of all, to tell exactly what happened to her. And do not dishonor her in anything that you do in your life. And I've tried that. It's very hard. It's very hard. But I think that
that's all I can do, and I have an obligation. I have to do that, or I'm a monster, I guess. I want to have a chance at a life. I understand that, Cassie can't. And I never ignore that. You know, she's dead and not anything is gonna change that. You know, I did something terrible and there has to be consequences for that. Everything we do in life, there's always consequences.
I don't know. I have a lot of ambitions, and I mean, if I were to get out, I know exactly what I would do with my life. But being in here, that's all I have is just these. It feels like all I have is just to sit here and rot, and there's no redeeming qualities. There's nothing I can do really to alleviate any. I don't know, it's like just watching yourself decompose. It's just horrible.
He's been in prison 6 years, and he's still on his first day. You know, he hasn't progressed at all. And in the end, it's gonna hurt him in the end. Either psychologically, if he has a conscience, or in courts, they don't want to hear that you're completely innocent. He's not innocent.
Now, I'm sorry, I don't want to boost up, a convicted killer, unless it's Ed Kemper. But Brian Draper's here is spitting bars right now. Seriously, I'm actually impressed with how he's owning up to what he's done. And how he can learn and grow and improve from a heinous crime that he committed. Tori can go fuck himself with a hot curling iron.
He's not. I'm not innocent. I'm guilty. And he's guilty. And that's where we all should start at. After the crime had happened, I had horrific dreams, bad dreams, where she was there. And just graphic, gruesome dreams about her dying. I would wake up in the night and I would be scared, terrified. Now I have dreams of her at school and everything's, good. She's always smiling, but I always know in the dream that I killed her. And those dreams are even worse. And that's the only thing I can do is hurt myself. Takes away the pain of just knowing what I did.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Dad.
How you doing?
Oh my God, you're dead. I don't understand.
I know, Brian. I don't understand. Trust me. It breaks my heart. I'd do anything for you. I'd change places with you in a minute. Everybody believes you. I love you, Brian, more than anything else.
I love you, Dad.
You've had hundreds of calls today, son, with people telling us no matter what they hear, they know better. They know better because you're not that kid.
Now, I've changed my opinion about Brian's parents. You know, I know I bashed on the mom in the beginning of the episode, you know, with her baby and sweetie fucking bullshit. But these calls were relatively soon after he was arrested. So, like, the first phone call was only a couple of days. The phone call just now was only a few weeks after the fact. So, of course, they're trying to maintain hope that their son is actually innocent. I get it. But we've also seen them 6 years in, and they're more accepting of the fact that their son is a murderer, but they still love him, you know, which I guess any decent parent would. Like, I accept that what you did was absolutely horrible. And maybe even I, as a parent, played a role that led to this. But, you know, you're my son, and I love you, you know, simple as that. So I was a little harsh in the beginning.
I knew that the truth was terrible, and I was really scared of you coming clean. Years after this happened, we were visiting, and I was like, no, I am not innocent, Mom. I had a part in this. I knew it was going to happen, and, you know, I went along with it, and And she was devastated, of course. I mean, she had to accept that her son had a part in this horrible crime. I have personally seen my dad cry 2 times, and the first time was when I won a scholarship for a science project I did. And the other time was when he was on the stand in court and he was crying because I hurt him so much. You parents, they love you so much, and that you show them this by destroying them. I got special parents. I just wish I could come back in time.
So it says here that in June 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court banned mandatory life sentences without parole for those under 18. It is left to the lower courts in each state to decide their fate. Upwards of 2,000 offenders were sentenced as juveniles to life imprisonment without parole, and they await their decisions. All right, so this sparks a pretty deep conversation on whether teens who commit violent crimes should be held in prison for the rest of their lives. Now, even 18-year-olds have been proven to not have fully developed brains, which doesn't usually happen until, like, your early to mid-20s. So for a 16-year-old to be judged by the same rules as a grown adult, I mean, it can seem kind of harsh. Maybe not in the moment, you know, as emotions are running high, you know, and families want justice for their loved ones. But I'm sure if a 16-year-old killed my 16-year-old, I'd want them dead, and I'd be happy to be the one to do it. But as we've seen in this case, there are two totally different perspectives by two different people who committed the same exact crime. Both now in their mid-20s, one is fully accountable for the pain that they caused, not only to Cassie Starr's family, but to his own as well. And while the other one, Tori, still hides from accepting their role in Cassie's murder, whether they're still trying to protect themselves or protect their family from fully knowing the truth, that their son masterminded and helped commit the murder of a young girl. So my opinion on this whole thing is that a teenager should not receive a mandatory life sentence with no parole. Like, yes, they should be punished severely for committing a violent crime, and maybe a life sentence should be recommended, but they should also have their case reviewed after, say, 20, 25 years, because both Brian and Tori are currently on two separate paths. One who is taking accountability and is looking forward to the possibility of living a productive life outside of prison, and one who is still pointing fingers and may never acknowledge his role in the crime. But they're both deserving to at least be given a chance to be reviewed by a parole board. I'm pretty sure one will be deserving of a second chance at life, while the other one may never be ready for that chance. You know, hopefully he gets his shit together and he starts like taking, you know, accepting his role in the whole thing. But yeah, so thank you all for spending time with me today. Please let me know your thoughts in the comments. I'd love to hear what you have to say. And while you're there in the comment section, let me know if there's a video or a topic you'd love me to chill along with. So that'll do it for this episode of YouTube and Chill. I hope you all have an amazing 2024. See ya.